I next met with Dr. Raphael Rossell, who at the last ASCO meeting presented the historic findings of the so-called EURTAC trial conducted in Spain, France, and Italy, which compared the EGFR TKI erlotinib to chemotherapy as first-line treatment of EGFR mutation-positive disease. To begin, Dr. Rossell reviewed the design of this study.
The primary endpoint was to try to demonstrate the superiority of erlotinib and EGFR TKI over chemotherapy in patients that were screened for EGFR mutations. The trial is positive, and I believe this could be of great relevance at the administrative level for health authorities just to recognize that the new prescription or the new approach of patients with EGFR mutations, oral treatment with EGFR TKIs is the first indication for these patients. We must say that we are moving to a field that there is a tremendous new findings at the level of cancer biology, and we are nowadays in a position in the translational laboratories quickly just to set up these new techniques like important tools that we can foresee that in a few years we can just in the daily practice when we are visiting patients, we can have a key relevant genetic information just to share with the patients, just not only at the level of prognostic as well as the options of treatment. And this overall is called driver alterations or driver mutations, and this is a very important and fascinating field that is quickly evolving in a very positive way. You know, for instance, until recently, many discoveries at the level of genetic alterations, gene amplification, other aberrations were identified, but without no special meaningful sense for a specific new therapeutic interventions. Nowadays, it's amazing because important pharmaceutical firms at the level of very strong research, they are identifying useful drugs for these alterations. And this is a new field that will evolve very rapidly.
What are some of these other factors that influence this? You've written, I was kind of surprised about BRCA1 mRNA. Is that related to this?
Yes, well, this is the tools that are being implemented in the laboratory. First of all, is a genomic analysis, meaning mutations. Then, nowadays, new technologies can make feasible to isolate RNA from paraffin embedded tumor tissue. And these small fragments of RNA can be amplified by quantitative PCR. And this permits just to examine, quantify the expression of the transcript of the mRNA, that this can be altered in the sense of being increased or decreased, and this is also influenced not only DNA repair genes that are very relevant in terms of prognosis, in terms of predicting different types of response to chemotherapy. Even relatively well known in breast cancer, triple negative, they have low levels of mRNA or BRCA1, and this can be one of the biomarkers just to predict sensitivity to a specific therapy like PARP inhibitors. And this is a constellation of information because PARP inhibitors also downregulate BRCA1, and we are just also examining multiple components of the DNA repair pathway. We have to confess that customized chemotherapy is an important issue. However, it has not been fully recognized, and we need just to be demonstrated in the form of randomized trials. But in BRCA1 is making complexes with many other DNA repair genes, and it's in spite of the complexity, we are trying to make it more easy for the practical aspects. No? But this is a thin layer between what we can offer to the patient and what is translational research that can be applicable in a near future. No? But at the same time that we are just working for diagnostic or therapeutic purposes and in the tumor samples at the same time, we are struggling with these tumor samples to obtain much more genetic information. And the field of BRCA1 is very relevant because it epitomizes the DNA repair pathways. and it's a very strong marker, but at the same time by itself, the information that you can obtain or you can use for therapeutic purposes could be misleading, and therefore this is under the field of research, and BRCA1 is influenced by many, many multiple components. Some of these components that are partners of BRCA1 were discovered in 2007, others in 2009, others in 2010. You can absorb all this knowledge and you can just create a map just to visualize what is the interrelationship between all these components of the DNA repair in the centralized on the BRCA1 role. And then using appropriate tools like quantitative PCR, you can then try to demonstrate what are the associations. This is a very promising line of research. Already, RAPID is a gene that governs the function of BRCA1. But this is not for guidelines of recommendation. This is not genetic guidelines, not yet, but I hope that in time could be. Other field of interest is, until recently, nobody was paying attention or no hope for histological squamous cell carcinoma. And there are compelling evidence that, for instance, 20% of squamous cell lung carcinomas have a gene amplification of one gene that is called fibroblastic growth factor receptor 1. And what is relevant from the medical point of view, that this alteration, this amplification, also happen in the same frequency in 20% of breast cancer luminal type B. And this, at least for me, is a sort of new paradigm, how squamous cell lung carcinoma can have the same genetic abnormality that happened in 20% of luminal type B breast cancer. And this abnormality, what is appealing is that it can be provided specific treatment. Not yet has been treated patients with amplification of fibroblastic growth factor, but there are several pharmaceutical firms that they have oral drugs that are inhibiting fibroblastic growth factor receptor 1. And this could be something that at the level of the clinical trials, phase 1, phase 2, this is an absolute need to move on this regard. Also, 30% of patients with squamous cell carcinoma have PIK3CA amplification. It's not for the medical oncologist. The important point is not how difficult it is just to implement. The techniques can be implemented. The techniques can be provided to low cost, just to have the harmonization of the laboratories that fulfill all the standard criteria, and then just to organize in a sort of network just to provide this service to all the patients, no? Because I understand, for instance, for EGFR mutation, that in some private laboratories, from the time that the tumor sample is sent to the time that you are receiving the result, maybe can last 2 weeks or 3 weeks. This is not acceptable, no? You can have the result the same week, at least an average of 7 days, but no more.
Let's talk about your cases, beginning with your 40-year-old woman.
Well, this case called dramatically my attention because this was a very young woman, 40 years old woman. She was a light smoker and quickly developed lung adenocarcinoma at the time of diagnosis with liver and multiple bone metastases following delivery of a child. And this was something that surprised, and always you can keep in mind the possibility that the disease is caused by EGFR mutation when you are dealing with a case and at the time of diagnosis have multiple metastases, no? Because the classical lung cancer of a smoker typically is a tumor with only a single metastatic site at the time of diagnosis. When you have more than one metastatic site and even widespread disease, for instance, by PET-CT scan in this young person with multiple liver mets and all the bone was spread with metastasis, this is something that you can just keep in mind, that the patient have many chances of harboring EGFR mutation. This was the case, and this is a problem that has to be improved. And this is also some sort of contradiction, widespread disease, difficult to obtain enough tumor tissue. This is amazing because this was not practiced a bone met. The diagnosis was obtained by bronchoscopy, but only enough for cytological assessment of the adenocarcinoma. And then EGFR mutations were identified in the periphery of blood, what we call the circulating free DNA that was obtained from serum. In fact, we know very well from serum of plasma several genetic anomalies, several kinds of mutations has been described for ages. And this is for us only one of the resources that we are using. One, we have a histological diagnosis, but only in the form of cytology. And we have a suspecting that the patient can have the disease caused by EGFR mutations. We are looking in the serum of plasma, and in this person, we were lucky to identify the mutation in the form of exon 19 deletion. And therefore, this stem just to recommend treatment with gefitinib and EGFR TKI. She obtained a rapid response, was deemed partial response. However, she lived less than 6 months, and then the disease started to progress with rapid regrowth, liver metastasis, no response to the chemotherapy. We performed a biopsy of one of the liver lesions, and we were able to detect the traditional quite resistant mutation of the gene EGFR, the T790M mutation, that at the same time was also detected in the peripheral blood.
The peripheral blood assay, is that a research technique or is it actually available clinically?
It's a research technique. You know that in the daily clinical practice, we are just dealing with many, many different aspects and tools, and this is part of the clinical research. Now, this, for instance, if you are participating in a protocol, a clinical trial, nowadays we are suggesting as secondary endpoints just to collect blood samples, in this case, serum or plasma at the baseline, at the time of progression, just to examine. But for us, it's a very important tool in the cases that we have not enough tumor tissue for the assessment, no? In addition, in the future, we can predict the monitoring of mutations in the blood could be very useful just to establish some sort of molecular response, no? Because until now, we have not this criterion in the assessment of the effect of treatments in lung cancer. The main difficulty is that EGFR, in the case that EGFR mutation is present, the current techniques are not over the level of detection in the blood is 60%, no more, meaning that not all the cases we can detect the mutation in the serum. It is a speculation, is the limitation of the technique or is the natural history. What means the natural history? It means that if the disease is widespread, there are much more chances to find the circulating tumor-free DNA in blood and also can be a marker if it's disappearing and also is predicting a recurrence before clinical visible progression. But this is still, as you said, as you may ask, on the field of clinical research.
We saw some pretty interesting data at ASCO on the irreversible TKI afatinib combined with cetuximab. Any take on the biology going on there?
Well, this is a very important question. I cannot fully explain in an objective way what could be the feature of afatinib. Afatinib certainly is a second generation, certainly is an irreversible inhibitor. It also is targeting HER2, EGFR and HER2. And this obviously is a more potent drug, but still the clinical trials are in the process of being presented next year. And afatinib, we have not enough information at the time of clinical progression to erlotinib or gefitinib, what could be the degree of efficacy of afatinib in clinical progression in patients with EGFR mutations, and what could be the real benefit of afatinib in the presence of the T790M. It seems that afatinib plus cetuximab, they were able to demonstrate 50% of response, but this 50% of response that was quite good happened equally in patients that at the time of clinical progression show T790M acquired resistant mutation, that in those having clinical progression, no T790M was found. We have to keep in mind that there are other mechanisms of resistance to erlotinib or gefitinib that are in a very fast process of being identified, and I hope they will provide useful information for appropriate new forms of treatment.
Why don't we talk about your 29-year-old woman?
Well, this case was a very young woman, 29 years, very like a smoker, that started with a lung adenocarcinoma with the form of malignant pleural effusion at the time of diagnosis more than 2 years ago. We fully suspected the patient could have EGFR mutations. We were examining the cytology from the pleural effusion from bronchoscopy and were negative for this mutation. We looked at KRAS mutations that were negative. Therefore, she started treatment with chemotherapy. She received on a continuous basis for 7 cycles of chemotherapy.
Just out of curiosity, which chemotherapy and did you use bevacizumab?
Well, this is a very important question that have no clear answer, since in Europe we are not using on a routine basis bevacizumab because it was a clinical trial that was performed in Europe with gemcitabine cisplatin plus bevacizumab, and the data were not so appealing. There was not demonstrated the superiority on survival, the magnitude of the benefit on PFS was very small, and therefore is not commonly used in lung cancer, and some parts of Europe, including many countries, without mentioning specifically anyone, we are using gemcitabine plus cisplatin. In this case, this young woman received 7 cycles of gemcitabine plus cisplatin with a partial response that lasted as long as we were providing the chemotherapy. We stopped since she had lung progression and lung mets, and then the patient received second-line treatment with pemetrexed. The disease remained stable for a short period of time, 5 months, when she developed more regrowth and more lung metastasis. At that time, we performed a second biopsy that again was negative for EGFR mutation, was negative for HER2 mutations, was negative for BRAF mutations, and was negative for ALK when ALK was screened by FISH. But the tumor sample for this second biopsy showed positivity for ALK when measured by immunostaining. However, immunostaining at that time was not recognized as enough to have a molecular diagnosis of an ALK translocation. Therefore, she continued receiving chemotherapy, this time with docetaxel as a single drug. And finally, at the end of last year, during the Christmas period, my goodness, then we detected that she has a muscle metastasis in the gluteus, no? And you can imagine that muscle metastasis is not a common situation and can herald very poor prognosis, no?
She had a palpable mass?
A palpable mass, was painful. A third biopsy reconfirmed that was a lung adenocarcinoma.
Did she by any chance have trauma to the area?
No, no trauma, no trauma at all. It was confirmed that was lung adenocarcinoma. And again, was very strong positive by ALK, and FISH was negative. This was the paradigm. And we were able to achieve the ALK inhibitor crizotinib, and she has obtained a complete response. Intriguingly, as the tool for ALK is FISH, we have to recognize, we reconfirmed that the ALK translocation was true, because we were performing PCR just to analyze the specific transcript of the translocation. And this was a very successful experience. And this also tells us, and many medical oncologists keep in mind, that we are treating patients, they are not responding, we are doing our best for them. And then we are looking at a second biopsy or a third biopsy. Finally, sometimes we are just fishing a genetic alteration that is meaningful. This is the perseverance in this case. We don't know how long she will remain in remission because we have still not so accumulated knowledge of long-term follow-up of patients with ALK translocations.
So this gluteal mass went away?
Yeah, it was gone away, yeah, completely.
Any side effects or toxicity with the crizotinib?
No. The crizotinib is amazing because have no side effects at all. Oh, there are some mild side effects, but we also know that new generations of ALK inhibitors are being developed that can be much more sensitive. We know that also with the field of EGFR mutations, very soon, maybe next year, specific inhibitors that also are effective for T790M will be started in clinical trials, to be tested. No, this is very appealing because sometimes when we have a patient with EGFR mutation that is progressing, you have several choices. One is to include in a clinical trial with new drugs, and another is just to switch to chemotherapy. As you know, people from Massachusetts demonstrated very convincingly that at the time of clinical progression in the field of patients with EGFR mutations, chemotherapy still is able to reverse the progression and then resensitize to the next progression to erlotinib again. But nowadays, this is amazing because with our patients, we are saying, well, we have more or less this kind of possibilities, 1-2 years free of disease with erlotinib, gefitinib. But don't worry, at the time of progression, we can offer chemotherapy. But we have to keep in mind that in 1 or 2 years, maybe next generation of clinical trials, you can be a candidate to. And this is amazing because it's a new class of medicine that we didn't live in the previous 20 years, not in lung cancer. And also, these common alterations that became just nowadays link common denominator of genetic alterations that is from different kind of tumors that also is part of the clinical research that make us to rethink more than before, no? Because as a clinical doctors, we are fully immersed in providing the best care for the patients, but no free time to think a little, no? All the cancer biology knowledge nowadays, all the new things that are being discovered at preclinical level, almost all of them are true in terms of clinical application and also with a new concept of clinical translational laboratories like kitchens and then restaurants. We can just cook very efficiently for the patients, but we have to admit that we have to put this in good terms with the regulatory issues and also just to try to establish a new mechanism of negotiating with the pharmaceutical firms, because until now the common rule is that the new drugs for pharmaceutical firms, they are designing the trials with little options just to be in the process of building the good concept for the good clinical benefit of the new drug that you are trying to test. And this now, thanks to this infinite knowledge in molecular biology, this field is changing very rapidly, you know.
So last issue I wanted to ask you about was maintenance treatment in the EGFR wild situation. We had the Paramount study reported, which used continuation maintenance with pemetrexed. Where do you stand on maintenance?
The concept of maintenance was created a few years ago. It's amazing because things have changed so drastically because more than 20 years ago, we were still hesitating whether or not chemotherapy can be useful. We can remember historically trials comparing chemo versus placebo in first-line option, and then the guidelines only 4 cycles of chemo, 4 or 6. This is a little conundrum, how many cycles. And the concept of maintenance is just to be something just covering this gap, 4-6 cycles. We have to continue chemotherapy. And obviously, any kind of treatment in patients without a specific genetic anomaly that can be specifically treated, you know the answer, no? You are stopping chemo without progressing. You can have a short weeks of tranquility, and then the tumor is progressing, no? And this is just to try to cover this gap. But I am assuming that maintenance, either with pemetrexed or other drugs, can provide for the patient not so appealing benefit in the sense that patients and families will not be jumping of joy when they look, I will just give maintenance and maybe you can be 1 or 2 months more free of disease. With the jumping news is when you are providing hope for years or more substantial periods of time, no?